Blog Talk Radio.
We're getting into the second games, and if you're a Cowboy fan, you're in the third game because we started a week before everybody. So, you know, week one's already done. We are back live. Had to move the show from last night to tonight. One night change. I apologize. Things came up unavoidable, but here we are live. New time, just for tonight only. And we're ready to rock and roll. A lot to talk about tonight. 90-minute show or less. You know, we're going to coast through this preseason and save the real good stuff for the regular season. So this is just getting everybody getting used to the Madden voice again, us getting used to being back on the air weekly and watching what's going on in the NFL, watching what's going on in these preseason games, and really getting a gauge of what is happening out there. So, but, you know, I don't do this by myself, but I am a part of a three-man team, and it is me, Commissioner T, live here on the Madden Voice tonight. If you want to call in, it's 347-838-9525. Again, 347-838-9525. You can catch us on Twitter. Just hashtag either TMV or send it to the Madden Voice or do both. And if you get a chance, go on Facebook and just search for the Madden Voice. Like us. Yeah, just go to Google. Google the Madden Voice. And you'll see all of our social networking endeavors going on. But let me bring on co-host number one, EAFL Super Bowl number one champion, won the first EAFL Super Bowl ever. What is the EAFL? I'm not going to tell y'all tonight. But when I remind y'all, you're going to say, oh, wow, that's some bad stuff. Well, he won the first Super Bowl ever in the EAFL. Man has his PhD. Man lives on the West Coast. Man has really no problems in the world anymore. Yeah, you know, I just want to switch places with him for a week. That's all I'm saying. I just want to switch places with him. But he's joining us tonight, about to head out to Vegas. But, you know, he decided to find a few minutes to hang with his boys here on the Madden Voice. Dr. Train, welcome to the Madden Voice.
How you doing, T?
Doing good, brother. Doing good, man. It's good to be back. Good to have you back. You understand what I'm saying? All right. Let's bring on our other co-host. Probably already playing that Madden 25. You know, it's the best game ever. I'm just kidding. That's what everybody says as soon as Madden comes out. It's the best game ever. One of the best Madden players in the world. Check him out on go to iTunes and look up Madden Nation Season 4. Just go to YouTube, Madden Nation Season 4. You look up K-Star, and that's him. Big Pittsburgh Steelers fan and another co-host for the Madden Voice. Welcome back to the Madden Voice, K-Star.
What's going on, fellas?
Okay,
sir. Not a lot.
Happy to be back with you guys. And yeah, Madden 25, the demo. Like, everyone's always really excited. I like it so far, but we will see. We will see.
Yeah.
How the game plays.
Every year I get asked, "You going to buy Madden this year?" And every year I say probably, and I haven't bought it 3 years in a row. When I left Madden, I left Madden. But maybe this year. Maybe this will be the year that I pick up the game. We'll see. Not that it matters. They're not going to really, who cares, right? I ain't nobody. I'm not K-Star. You know what I'm saying? I'm not Problem. You know what I mean? I ain't nobody. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, maybe this year. So, You know, got a lot to talk about tonight. Going to talk about the Cowboys, the Bears, the Steelers, the latest on Aaron Hernandez. Going to talk about celebrations. McNabb had some very interesting things to say about RG3. You know, we were going to talk about the Patriots, and then next thing you know, all over ESPN, Tom Brady's knee injury. So we're going to talk about that. Going to talk about the Jets. A lot of quarterback talk today. And should be a very exciting show. But, you know, we're going to do something first that we do every year on the Madden Voice just to share with our audience something near and dear to us. EAFL was the name that I gave a league of Madden ballers that at one time was the most dominant online Madden-related football league and arguably one of the most dominant online entities ever. Had our own website, Madden game, tournament, forums, you know, everybody in Madden knew who the EAFL was. I don't care whether you were a game designer for Madden or whether it was K-Star or Problem or any of the top Madden ballers, everybody knew who the EAFL was. Well, you know, a few years ago, it was time for Commissioner T to move on. You know, at some point you realize there's nothing left to do. And I left Madden and no regrets. But to keep the name alive, we kept the Fantasy Football League going. And Dr. Train has done just an incredible job of running the EAFL Fantasy Football League. And he's really good at what he does. He's very detail-oriented, and he's a great commissioner. And so, you know, something that he likes to do, and hopefully we have some of the Madden guys listening right now. If not, they'll catch the archive. And I'm going to let Train explain exactly what it is we're going to do on the show for the Fantasy Football League.
Well, as T explained, this is another year of football, so it's another year for fantasy football, and everyone's going crazy. Who do you pick? Who do you keep? So the AFL has its own Fantasy Football League, and what we do here a couple of weeks before the draft is to do a live draft order. And pretty much all this does is let each owner know just what position they'll be drafting in, just in case they want to go in and do some mock drafts or whatnot. So I won't hold this up any longer with this. Normally, I will pull names and T will pull numbers. Do you want to do it that way, T? Because I'm actually prepared to just pull names and put the number as I go.
I have the numbers.
Oh, you actually have numbers? Okay, cool.
Yeah, I have numbers. I got a box here. Here it is. See, I don't know if you can hear this or not. This is a box I have with 12.
I hear ruffling.
Here's ruffling.
My first year in this draft, I want to point that out, as I'm very, very pleased and honored to be in.
It will be your first year in this draft, K-Star.
Yeah.
We managed to add K-Star last year at a discounted rate, but definitely glad to have him in the league so we can have trash talk and fantasy football and trash talk in real football. T, you say you got 12 numbers?
Yeah.
Okay, you need to add two more.
Oh, it's 14? I thought
14.
It was 12. You know, I don't pay attention. Hold on, I can do that. Don't take me a second. It only takes me a second to do that. It's real quick
no problem.
Easy, so bear with me. So while
I'm
doing that.
Go ahead and also say, I do want to say congratulations to our last year's winner, if he's listening, but it was Pimmer. I think that was either his second or his third championship that he's won with the EFL Fantasy Football. The guy hogs all the running backs.
Faggot.
Yeah.
Faggot.
We don't like him.
I'm just kidding. Tom knows he's my man, 20 grand. He beat me 1 year, so I can't really complain.
He was actually a very Madden player. Very good defense.
Whoa. Yeah, wasn't bad.
All right.
Yeah, hold on. I just got to throw him in the box, you know, because, you know,
okay.
I do this. I'm straight up legit here. All right. You guys in here, you know what I'm saying? 14 numbers. You know,
so what, to provide some context, this is a keeper league. I want everyone to be aware of that.
Say it again?
Keeper league. This is a keeper league with one player.
Oh, yeah, it is a keeper league. Well, we may be able to announce the keepers maybe next. Well, I don't know. I don't know if we'll get a chance to announce the keepers. They're due, I think, like maybe a week before we draft.
And they're absolutely mandatory, correct? I want to make sure I understand that, being that a first time member of this league. The keeper is mandatory.
Mandatory that you
keep someone. Is that correct?
Yes, it's definitely mandatory that you keep someone. Else I will pick someone for you.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I'm Jamal Charles, so it's not a problem. I just, again, wanted to make sure I was aware.
Absolutely. Definitely mandatory. All right. He got his box. I got my tin can. I'm going to open it up. See, I'll let you pull a number for me first, and then I'll pull a name.
Now, do you want to do it that way, or you want to pull the name first? I think you just pull the name first. Because if this is emulating the NFL draft, you always know the team before you know the player, right? You know the team, right? The first pick is boom, right? And then they name the player. So the suspense here is not the team; it's really the number. That's the suspense, right?
The number, yes, true that.
Right
now,
so
for those that are listening, why we do it this way is so people won't think that Dr. Train rigged the draft. Okay, I can only pull one half of it. He has the other half, and K-Star is a witness.
Yeah.
So here we go.
All right. Hey, who's Doc? You documenting this, Train?
Yeah, I'm documenting it.
All right. Okay.
All right. First name. The Bammoth, our first EAFL Madden legend.
Oh, Bama. That's my man. 20.
Yeah, Madden player, Bama. By the way. Good tournament player.
Yeah, he is. He's good. Okay, I'm reaching in. I have, let's see, a number. Just one. Oh, nope, there's two. Got to put that one back. Okay. One number. And the number is
number two.
Number two.
Damn. Wow.
Bama got the second pick.
It is.
Bama, I expect a check in the mail to Commissioner T. All right. FedEx that bad boy.
I gotta look at it.
Who's gonna take a quarterback or wide receiver? Who doesn't know any better? All right. Next name is drumroll. Good friend of mine, Shy West Side Thunder.
All right.
Good friend from college. Name is JT.
All right. Pulling out the number. And number one.
Wow.
Number one.
Wow, he is going to love that. All right.
Oh, I'm a hater. I'm not a fan of that. Not at all.
Please. You guys here?
Hey, it doesn't matter where you pick. It just matters who you pick.
No, that's
where
absolutely
you pick.
True. But, I mean, let me tell you. I must have been picking first.
All right. Next name is Bad Boy, who is also a former EAFL fantasy football champion.
Number is Unlucky 13.
He's at the bottom end of the snake.
Yep. But that snake will coil.
All right, you can do damage down there.
Yes, sir.
All right. Next name is my boy, my homeboy. My brother from another mother, North Memphis.
Ah,
yeah,
that's your boy, all right. Wasn't he your opponent in the first EAFL Super Bowl?
He was my opponent in the first Super Bowl of the AFL.
That's
hey,
right,
is this
see?
The big Titans fan? Is that who this is?
No. He's a big 49ers fan.
He's a big 49ers fan. All right, who's the Titans?
Yes,
another. Oh, never mind. Remember the Titans. That's a very good one. Okay.
All right. He'll be pretty happy. Number three.
Nice. He always ends up in the top half of the draft some kind of way. We need to rig this thing better.
That's what I'm saying. I should. I'm just honest.
Doing a very poor job. None of us have been picked.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just honest, man. This is some bull right here, man. Top three picks are gone already. Ain't nobody on the show.
All right, this guy. I have never met in person. T's met in person. He's pretty much a jokester, but he never makes it to a live draft. I will personally call him this year Brooklyn Will, a.k.a. Fastball.
Big Willie.
Yeah.
All right. Number seven.
Middle of the draft. Not a bad spot. Middle is good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. They got never makes it to a live draft. It's annoying. But he gets a good team. It's also annoying.
If we have to draft at the gym, he'd be there because he's a workout fiend.
Right.
Just saying.
All right. The next person, good friend of mine, also from TSU, Jerry's kids, who's also a Cowboys fan.
Yeah. Who cares? All right. We got the next number. Number 11.
All right. Number 11. Hopefully he'll do better this year than he did last year. I warned him coming in. He didn't believe me. All right. Next name. Remember the Titans, a.k.a. Scrappy.
Another original EAFL. Mind Matt. He was an original member, too.
Yeah. Original number two. Yeah.
Number four. Pick number four.
Wow. Nice. I know he'll be keeping CJ2K.
Well, I believe he also has Doug Martin. I think I traded him Doug Martin throughout the season.
No, but he still has Chris Johnson. I know he still has Chris Johnson. He gets him every year.
No,
he will never give up
Chris Johnson. I know he has CJ, but I'm pretty sure he also has Doug Martin. So he's a. We'll see how big of a fan he is, essentially.
All right. Okay. All right. And our last year's winner, Pimmer.
All right.
Rig it. He killed
number
it every
10.
Year.
Number
all
10.
Right, that's good rigging right there.
Hey,
way to go.
Yeah, it's not
high
bad,
five.
Buddy. It's 14, so.
He has to make a choice between Tom Brady and Aaron Foster. More than likely to be Aaron Foster.
Yeah.
All right, next name. Our very own beloved K-Star, something spectacular.
All right.
Yeah.
Something irrelevant. Let's pull out his number. Okay.
Did you say number 14? I thought you said 14.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
How about we pull out a relevant number here? Let's not.
Number 9. Number 9.
All right. No, I'm saying
yeah,
it's kind of still in the
I
middle.
I can deal with that. I can work with that.
All right. Next name is our very own Dr. Train, Monsters of the Midway.
All right. The legend himself.
You're right.
All right. Picking out a number here. Damn, can't get my hands on it. Here we go. All right. Here we go. Number 14.
You got to be kidding me.
Sorry, Shane.
I feel like he did me in on that one. I said Rick Pimmer, not me.
Trust me, if I was going to rig anybody, it would be Pimmer. Yeah, that's true, though. That's true.
You say what?
Back-to-back
pick.
That's true. I do like the back. I make the best of it, though. I make the best of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Got a lot of research to do now.
I don't have much of a choice to make the best of it, to be honest with you. So,
all right. Matt Forte would definitely be my keeper. Hey, our very own, beloved, original founder of EAFL, Mitch T. Krypton is the name of his team.
That's right.
He's also a Cowboys fan.
Yes, he is. And his pick is number 12.
Thought you was going to say we don't care.
I mean, all the good picks are gone, so it really didn't matter. Number 12. One year it's going to happen. We're going to do this, and I'm going to get the first pick, and everybody's going to have a fit. But at least it's not
because you got the numbers.
Right, exactly.
Awesome. All right. Next, Joe Maniacs. This guy loves to trade every week until the trade deadline is up.
Every day. Number five.
Nice pick. All right. A few more left. Next name is the running up squad. I think that's Rook. Yeah. He's been with us for a while.
Number 8.
Not an original member, but he's been with the AFL for a while.
Number 8.
Number 8, middle. And last but not least, Little Giants, a.k.a. Tiki, another EASL legend. By default, his number will be six.
Yep, because my nine was like that. Yeah, six.
Oh, six, yeah. I was just waiting for the confirmation.
Six.
All right. There goes our EASL draft order. I will post the results later.
All right.
People see.
EASL fantasy football members, good luck this year. And we will certainly, since all three of us are in this league, from time to time bring some of those issues onto the show. And all of you guys are welcome to call into the show at any time. We're gonna run right into some stuff here. I'm actually going to read Adam's post on the Madden Voice page, simply because Adam is our Australian friend. And he's been away for a while, but he's back. And so I just thought we'd give him some love. And I haven't read this, so I don't know what I'm reading, but I'm going to read it because I can. Welcome back. Sorry I've been so – yeah, very good. Good, very, very loyal guy. Sorry I've been so slack on Facebook, but I have been just as slack with my friends and family, so don't feel too bad. Great interview with Randy Garcia. For those of you who may not have heard, last week we had Aaron's cousin Randy Hernandez on the show, and gave us a very, very solid interview for about 40-45 minutes, and I thought it was a good interview. It was so well presented that it really felt like a humanitarian story instead of a football story. Great job. Of course, there is a however, LOL, and we know Adam and his howevers. I wanted to take up a point of contention from the previous show where it was questioned about NFL players being held to a higher standard. I know they're basically kids, and all they want to do is play football, but they aren't stupid. Every single one of them know before going into a contract that they will be living under a microscope. They also get better drug, drink, driving, criminal activity counseling than most of the population. It's human to make mistakes, but these guys are paid more than well enough to know better. Maybe it isn't fair, but it is what it is. Give me $1 million a year, and I'll be a saint. Well, I won't drink and drive, do drugs, punch police officers, or anything like that. Great to have you in the NFL back. It's a little easier on us Aussies because our football season runs March to September, but I must admit I've been like a lion prowling in his cage for some NFL. So I'm just going to comment quickly and then let you guys comment on his comment about, you know, give him $1 million and he'll be a saint. And the access of resources that the NFL gives players. And it is actually a solid point. But let me say this. Money doesn't make you smart. Money doesn't improve your decision making. It has been proven time and time again that if you took someone who was poor and gave them money without the skills to manage it, they will become poor again. So let us not think that because someone is a great football player and they're playing a sport that they excel in, that means that they're intelligent. No, it means they're a great football player. Let us not assume that because someone has had a 10-year NFL career and has $100 million of earnings that they know how to make good decisions, because we can cite many, many cases where that's not the case. So that was kind of my point is, you know, they're very good athletes, excellent athletes, some of the best athletes in the world playing a high-profile sport. Therefore, they have a high earning potential and therefore make more than most of us will ever see in our lives. But they are still people and still subject to all of the same mistakes that everybody else makes. It's as simple as that. The money doesn't change a thing. The access to more resources through the NFL doesn't change a thing. If you're going to make a mistake, you're going to make a mistake. If you want to live the straight and narrow, you will live the straight and narrow. It's as simple as that. Any comments from you guys?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it can happen to anyone. Like, the thing is, they make more, but they also spend more because of it. So it's just simply one of those things where, I mean, again, if they have no background or have studied financing or you know, have managed their own account, then it's really going to be tough for them to make, you know, good decision, or even know what a good decision is at that point, because there are a lot of people who will reach out, family, friends, stuff like that, for a share of their money, or, you know, stuff like that. So they have a lot of different pressures in which normal day society doesn't also have to deal with, so that's also something to keep in mind.
I would just agree that money does not help you make better decisions. It definitely won't keep you out of trouble. If anything, it gives you access to get in more trouble. So your ability to make good decisions comes from, you know, maybe the advice that you get from others or the lessons you've learned from making bad decisions.
Well said.
Regardless.
Adam, I'm sorry?
I was just saying, regardless of how much you make or who you are or what status you are.
Well said. Adam, welcome back to the Madden Voice. We are still waiting for the call-in that you keep promising us that we've never had. So, Adam, love to have you call into the show. All right, K-Star wanted to lead off with Tom Brady, and I said, when you host the show, then you can decide what we lead off on. So maybe this season, K-Star will actually stop dodging it and actually host a Madden Voice. Maybe he'll actually, you know, we'll see. But K-Star, you know, you wanted to talk about the Tom Brady injury. What's the latest as far as you know with the injury to the knee?
Well, for those who aren't aware, basically Brady was the Patriots were playing the Buccaneers in some type of scrimmage in training camp, and there was a play in which Brady was throwing down the right sideline where his offensive tackle, I believe his name is Nate Soldier, was pushed into his leg while he was in the middle of a throwing motion. And Brady went down. There's actually a video of it being recorded out there on Twitter now. It's been on ESPN Sports and stuff like that where he's seen grabbing his knee, rolling around. But as it turns out, and he was taken back with the trainer, as it turns out, they have run an MRI. The results come back negative. So Patriot Nation, which had their collective hearts stop for a solid, I don't know, 2 hours, may now resume and be with the normal because it looks like he's day-to-day and will be okay. But I just thought it was big because, I mean, let's face it, if Brady went down for any legitimate period of time, that would change the landscape of the AFC for the most part because there's only a few legitimate teams there. So the Patriots definitely dodged a bullet. That is for sure. And I'm happy that Brady is okay. Even as a Steelers fan, I'm happy because I don't want to see someone go down with injury, especially a player like Tom Brady, a first ballot Hall of Famer. I respect greatness. So I'm happy Mr. Brady is okay.
Part of the game. I could care less if he got hurt. Part of the game. He already missed a year. It's part of the game. You know, no one's going to say, knowing when Romo broke his collarbone, I got no love. When Ben had knee injuries, ankle injuries, you got no love. When Cutler was injured in a championship game, you got no love, Trent. If he gets hurt, then he's out.
Bad about him.
That's all I'm saying. So, hey, I get what you're saying, Case. I'm not disagreeing with you. I just care less. If he gets hurt and he's out, now what you going to do? You got Tim Tebow, right? What are you going to do now? I mean,
today was also Tim Tebow's birthday, by the way.
And he almost got a wonderful present.
Yeah, right.
and just for everyone to be clear, it was the same knee that Brady hurt a few years ago. So clearly, that's why the anxiety was even higher because it was the same knee that he tore the ACL on it a few years ago that he was out for the season. So, but you know, it's part of the game. No one, you know, as a Patriots fan, sure you don't want to see your Hall of Fame quarterback out in the preseason and possibly done for the year, and I can sympathize. But I'm not a Patriots fan, so whatever. He's okay. Good for him. Day to day, according to Adam Schefter on ESPN. But to me, what I want to talk about even before the Brady injury is, you know, Tim Tebow made his debut. I don't see any change in him. I don't see any improvement. In my opinion, he looks the same as you. I think what you get with Tim Tebow is what you get with Tim Tebow. I don't think anyone's going to turn him into, you know, a Russell Wilson or a Kaepernick or, you know, or let's go back and let's even use a Dante Culpepper or Donovan McNabb, bigger, larger, but athletic quarterbacks, but with good arms. I don't think he's going to be that guy. He's going to be a 50-55% completion quarterback who has some agility and can run the ball. And I think what he brings to a team is leadership. Well, you know what? You don't even really need that on the Patriots at this point because you got Tom Brady. So I don't know, man. I mean, I think he's – I don't see it. I don't see it. I don't see Tim Tebow emerging. I don't see it. I think it's a failed experiment like it was in New York. There was a reason why when Sanchez was tanking in New York last year that Tim Tebow never got that job. There was a reason for that. And Belichick's been known to take chances on players and bring people in and let's give it a shot, and that's what he's doing. But I would keep their expectations very, very low because I don't see it. Don't see it at all.
I think we'll see him, but only in packages and certain red zone situations. And that's honestly the only thing he really should be doing at this point.
Yeah, but how effective is it going to be if you bring him in the red zone knowing that he can't throw and then he's going to run? So you're going to put 8 in a box on him, and it's over.
And you know? He's taking Tom Brady off the field probably, which is just never a good idea.
Or what are they going to do? Split Tom Brady out as a wide receiver and put Tim Tebow as you know what I mean? I don't get it. I don't get it.
What I don't get is how this dude plays the quarterback position all those years in college. He drafted in the pros to play the quarterback position. And you never get better at throwing the ball? Ever? This guy is not a quarterback.
There is a reason.
Unless you are willing to run the Wildcat 24/7.
There is a reason why there are superstars and then everybody else. Right? There's a reason why. Because a superstar can do that. A superstar will not just work hard. They will work hard and improve and get better. Right? And Tim Tebow is no superstar. He's an NFL player, but he's no superstar. And Train, you're absolutely right. You know, he had his heyday in Denver, and he was able to do, you know, some things down there that, you know, we really didn't think that he would be able to do, you know.
All right. Obviously, Sears with this game. They're on defense, total yards and scoring, playing one of the most anemic offenses in all of football. The ankle for Big Ben is a lot better than what it was against San Francisco, which is definitely good news. But while we lost Mendon Hall, you know, again, Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, two prolific receivers for us. I just don't see how, you know, Tim Tebow and the Broncos can match us point for point at Mile High. Again, that offense is just horrendous to begin with, and they're playing against number one defense in the league. Troy Polamalu, James Harrison, Lamar Woodley, they're calling for you, Tim Tebow. I love you, but not this Sunday. Not this time.
Now, y'all may think I played that to give K-Star a hard time. I actually played that to blame K-Star. I actually played that this time because it's K-Star's fault. Because Tim Tebow goes into the playoffs a couple of years ago against the number one ranked defense in the NFL, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and beats them in overtime. And he is still to this day riding off of the fact that he was able to do that. To this day, they are still watching that videotape and that pass he made in overtime. The only time he ever made a pass that actually looked pretty good. And to this day. So it's K-Star's team's fault. It's K-Star's fault. Because K-Star said there's no way it's going to happen. His team went in there and let it happen. And now to this day, poor Tim Tebow goes to one of the most dominant NFL franchises ever, a team that's ranked number 2 at $1.8 billion in net worth. Behind my very own Dallas Cowboys at $2.3 billion, but that's another conversation altogether. I mean, this is one of the greatest NFL franchises of all time under Bill Belichick. He goes to this team because they know what he did in the AFC with Denver. Never got a chance in New York, and they're giving him a shot, and it's K-Star's fault. K-Star, it's your fault. You were T-Bowing that year. We got pictures of you at a wedding in a suit. T-Bowing.
You know, I think you were the first to T-Bow. I'm actually a little, what? I mean, Tim, I'm sorry. I know today was kind of your last strike. It was your birthday. I know you had someone looking out for you when Tom got hurt. But, I mean, hey, I guess I ruined your career, and I am sorry. But I'm not going to be feeling too horrible because you did actually take out my Steelers for – a couple of years ago in the playoffs, which I hear about probably every Tuesday around this time. So because of that, good riddance to the dude.
You said what? You hear about it almost every Tuesday? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
You don't want to come on the Madden Boys if y'all lose to Denver, man.
Now I'm going to get off. I would forever hate Tim Tebow.
I'm going to get off the train. Right. Okay. With what you gave me about Romo and how this and that and Romo and he didn't do it and blah, 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 all that bull. Man, do not. I'm going to tell you now, get the flu. Get a cold, get something, man. Sprain it, get a high ankle sprain, something. But you don't want to come on the Madden Voice next Tuesday night. If I don't care how, I don't care if Ben gets knocked out the first play and don't play the whole game. Don't come on the show next week because there's no way on earth the Steelers should lose it. You know, and let me just say this. Everybody gives Skip Bayless for starting the Tim Tebow bandwagon, but I still think it was K-Star. But just because we want to be fair, let's give Skip his due.
This kid is a gamer. He's a baller. He's a playmaker and a shot caller.
In case you didn't know,
I got Tebow. He shattered the mold. And all he does is win. All he does is win games.
Listen.
I got Tebow. He shattered the mold. And all he does is win. All he does is unleash.
Tell Tebow.
Let him go.
It's time.
Turn him loose.
Let him play. Let him
play. On Sundays.
Unleash.
Tell Tebow.
Let him go.
It's time.
Turn him loose.
Let him play.
I'm going to church Sunday.
Run, pass, option. I think that's my game.
I guarantee you that.
I'm no John Elway.
He's rewriting the book.
Week in and week out.
He's a unique
football player.
That's what Tim Tebow's all about.
He's a gamer. He's a baller. Playmaker. Shot caller. He's a gamer. He's a baller. Playmaker. Shot caller. Unleash
Tim Tebow.
Let him go.
It's time.
Turn him loose.
Let him play. Let him play.
Right on Sunday.
And all he does is win. All he does is win.
One more day. One more win.
All he does is win games.
Enough Tim Tebow talk. Let's move on. Geno Smith, Mark Sanchez. Conventional wisdom says that Mark Sanchez will start, and in time, Geno will take over. K-Star, what are your thoughts on what conventional wisdom is saying in New York right now? Do you think Mark Sanchez should be the starting quarterback of the New York Jets?
Well, initially, yes, only because and, by the way, Mark Sanchez is terrible. But the thing with it is, if you already put Geno in, fresh second-round pick, I mean, I don't feel like the first few games he gives you a better chance than Mark Sanchez to win. And the only reason why is because experience, moving the ball down the field. While Mark Sanchez is, again, pretty awful, you kind of know where his ceiling is, and it's very low. You give him a chance to at least get the team keep them afloat over 500 initially and see where the defense takes you rather than putting a quarterback in that may turn the ball over frequently since he's so young and put the defense in compromising situation consistently. So at first I would say Sanchez. But, at the end of the day, we're all quite aware that Gene's going to come in because I don't think any of us expect the Jets to be any good this year.
Train, I'm going to let you respond to that first. You agree? You don't agree?
A lot of people will say that experience is the best. That's the words I'm looking for. Lost my train of thought just that quickly.
You lost your doctor train of thought?
Let me put it to you this way. I would see it in good grief. I'm brain farting all of a sudden.
Mm. Let's ask the question.
I would see it in Geno's best benefit to not start. Because unless he shows some significant difference or separation from what Sanchez can do with the offense, I wouldn't start him. Just let him learn. Else you might end up, you might end up messing them up from the beginning. Not everyone that get drafted at quarterback is able to come in and be a significant impact immediately. What happened last season with those three guys? That's rare. We hadn't seen that in a while. We hadn't seen that since the Big Ben, Eli Manning, Rivers draft. But even those guys, even, you know, those guys sat. They all sat. They didn't come out the rookie year. They sat. I mean, Big Ben actually on the field faster, and I think believe they ended up winning the championship, but the other two sat. So what happened last year was rare. And I think it would be in Geno Smith. From what I've seen, it would be in his best benefit to sit. That's Sanchez
right.
takes
so,
the heat.
So we agree the Jets are horrible. We agree Sanchez has done absolutely nothing. We agree Sanchez is not the future of that team, but we're gonna let him lead the team anyway. We're going to let him lead the team that he's not the future of, that he did nothing for last year. But we're going to say, go ahead, and, you know, we want you to lead this team and to teach Geno Smith, right? We want Geno backing you up and learning from you, even though you suck, even though you did nothing last year, nothing the last couple of years, but this is the message we're sending. This is a team that at one point has six quarterbacks on its roster. And after everything is said and done, they're going to end up starting the same guy that ended the last season. Okay, first of all, can you say dysfunctional? First of all, can you say dysfunctional? Second of all, can you say, hey, I'm not living off of what Kaepernick or Wilson or RG3 or, you know, any of these guys did. I'm not saying that that's normal, but what I'm saying is just look at this team for what you have, and can Geno Smith go in and do any worse than we saw Mark Sanchez? You hand this guy the job, and you say it is your job. It's yours. And now, if after you've done that, you need to go back and revisit that, well, that's football. That's football. But give him the support and let Mark Sanchez know that your putrid, poor, horrific performance is not forgiven or forgotten. I mean, what's his motivation? What's Sanchez's motivation to show that he should be the starting quarterback? I don't see it. Because, you know, well, it's an open battle and it's an open competition. And, you know, man, you give Geno the job and you say, listen, it's your job to lose, bro. Mark, here's a clipboard and a hat. Good luck to you. You know, that's what I would have done. And if Geno fell flat on his face, fine, then you reevaluate. But I don't know that he would have. Yeah, it's going to be growing pains. There's going to be bumps in the road. It's NFL, you know. And maybe he takes 4 or 5 games before he gets into rhythm. But you already know what you got with Sanchez. That's my problem here. You know what you got. Were you expecting him to just wake up? Were you expecting him to just wake up and become Tom Brady? It ain't going to happen. Love the guy in college. Hate him in the pros. Hate him in the pros. He's just not a good quarterback. You know, great guy, great person, not a good quarterback. Now, I would even question whether you could say he was an average quarterback. He's not very good. So, you know, I don't get it. You didn't give Tebow a chance last year, which I disagreed with. I think he had nothing to lose. And now you've got a guy coming in with a pretty strong pedigree that people feel will take over the team. What are you waiting for? To me, it's mismanagement and dysfunction down there in New York on these Jets. And you got a guy that you think can do it. You had six quarterbacks on this roster, and none of those guys you felt were going to do better than the horrible job that Sanchez did last year? And because of his experience, what, his experience in playing like shit the last two seasons? I mean, those AFC championship appearances are that's thing in the past. And let's be honest, why? That's that damn defense. Okay, let's just be clear. So, I my opinion, I think it's a huge mistake. I think you put this kid in, you give him everything you got, you give him all the support, all the coaching, everything. You make a commitment to him. You know he's going to have his problems. You know he's going to have his bumps. But by 4 or 5 games into it, he's going to come into his own, and you're going to start to see some real good things out of him. And you might be able to put some wins together, and maybe by halfway through the season, now start looking at, you know, 4-4, 3-5, and start thinking, hey, we're not out of this yet. We're not out of this, you know, by sight. Now this guy's got his legs underneath him. He's got the system in place. He's playing well. That's what I would have done. But, you know, like I said, this is the Jets we're talking about. So, you know, what do you expect? All right. Let's just go another direction real quick. Just Aaron Hernandez case, you know, we're going to keep our eyes on it. A couple of new developments there. They're still dredging, looking for the murder weapon down here in Bristol. They've moved to another lake. I'm not sure if that hit the news or not. I have, obviously, living in town, know things that may or may not have been reported because I haven't watched as much ESPN as I normally do. But in case you guys didn't know, they moved to another lake and they're still looking for the murder weapon. But the other thing of interest is that now there's discussions that maybe his fiance may be involved at hiding the weapon or something like that. You know, all I'm going to say is I hope not. And I'm not even going to expand on that. I'm just going to say I hope not. I truly, honestly hope that is not the case, because the domino effect of that being confirmed, few people have any idea on what that's really going to mean. So I hope that's not the case. So we will keep an eye on the Hernandez case, one from a general news perspective, and two from, you know, my seat as someone who's right here in Bristol, Connecticut, and know quite a few people involved, and we'll keep everybody up to date. And it's not going away, guys. It's going to be a part of the news for the next couple of years. So, but let's go to Train. Train, give us a brief state of the Bears. You know, how, honestly, not as a homer, but as a realist, how you feeling about your Bears? Lovey's gone, Urlacher's gone, new season. How you feeling about your Bears?
The short answer would be I'm still upbeat, very upbeat, and mainly because it's football, it's any given Sunday. But also, I do believe Trestman is a good coach. You know, just reading about his history in the NFL, his history in the CFL, dude pays attention to detail. He would have all the opportunity to get the Bears in the right position. Now, as far as what I've seen just from our first preseason game, the good news is the defense is still the defense. The defense can still do what it does best, and that's create turnovers. The bad news is the offense is still the offense. It still does what it does best and not move the ball. So it's still like a waiting. Now, mind you, they didn't have all the starters in play. There was no Brandon Marshall. We didn't have the starting left tackle. But still, you would still like to see your first team, your first string offense move the ball. And it's pretty much a wait and see to see if they get any better offensively through the preseason. So basically, I look at it as same spot we were last year, in a sense that when the season starts, the defense will be ready. The offense hopefully will get it together in time enough for Chicago to make a push for the playoffs. Because this season, our schedule is nowhere near as cake as it was last year, where you had easy teams in the beginning, hard teams in the end. Now, we have difficult teams almost every week.
Okay. K-Star, brief state of the Steelers. Disappointing year last year. What do you think this year?
I am very, very, very encouraged with this team we have, mainly because I feel like we're in a pretty strong draft class. Just today I learned that Le'Veon Bell is actually atop the depth chart, the second-round draft pick, running back out of Michigan State, who has been drawing rave reviews in training camp, and not just from Steelers, Pittsburgh Press, but actually sports writers such as Peter King actually listed Le'Veon as the second most impressive rookie he's seen in camp. Jarvis Jones, the absolute sack master out of Georgia, the SEC's leading sacker last year, also is listed as playing with the first team. At outside linebacker, seen an often injured James Harrison. So I'm very encouraged by our rookie class that's coming in. Last year we dealt a lot with injuries to our quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, Troy Polamalu, James Harrison, Rashard, everyone. Throughout the season. So we combine that the new infusion of talent with a very, unlike Train over there and his Bears, with a very, very easy schedule this year. I feel playing some third place AFC teams throughout the season. I'm very encouraged and just hoping that our two key guys, Ben and Troy P43, can stay healthy. But with a Mike Tomlin coach team, I mean, this is a team that hasn't missed the playoffs in back-to-back seasons since 2000. Pre-Ben Roethlisberger, pre-Mike Tomlin, pre-Troy, all those guys. So I'm very encouraged. I'm very excited for part of it.
That's great. that's great. You know, I, you know, briefly on the Cowboys, you know, and I'm always one who doesn't believe in excuses, but the reality on defense last year is we were decimated with injuries, decimated. And, you know, those players that were out were Pro Bowl caliber players. Sean Lee, clearly Pro Bowl caliber linebacker. Bruce Carter, maybe not Pro Bowl caliber just yet, but certainly high level. And, you know, a handful of very top defensive players are out. The Cowboys, those players are healthy. They're playing well. We've changed the scheme around. And, you know, the Tampa 2 defense, we've seen just in preseason some real possibilities there on defense under the Tampa 2. And I think that with Jason Garrett not calling the plays and Bill Callahan calling the plays, it will allow Garrett to manage the team better. And some of the stupidity that we saw down the stretch with poor clock management and poor decision making, I think that's going to change. And literally that cost, you know, over the last couple of years, I'd say it probably cost a chance of winning 3 to 4 games. Not saying we would have won, but it cost the possibility of winning 3 to 4 games. Well, those potential wins are the difference between 8-8 and 9-7 or 10-6 in the playoffs. So optimism is an understatement in Dallas this year. You know, Jerry Jones is general manager, but and people say he should get out of the way, and I don't think people understand the guy has very high football IQ. Maybe he's not head coach material, but that's not his job. His job is to put the best players on the field and to put the best coaches to coach those players on the field, to provide the best facilities for these people. Well, you know, when you look at now his name escapes me. Train, who's our defensive coordinator? Monty Kiffin. You look at Monty Kiffin coming in.
Marinelli.
Right. You look at Garrett, who's coached under Jimmy Johnson and Bill Parcells, you know, and in his family has other coaches, John Garrett, his dad, and, you know, has a high pedigree, went to Princeton, very smart young man. Maybe wasn't a top quarterback player, but a very smart man. He has Bill Callahan, you know, took the Raiders to the Super Bowl. He has put, and every year, Dallas always has the talent and always has decent coaching, right? I mean, since Parcells, I don't know about Wade Phillips, but Parcells was in there. There's been some good coaching on this team. So I think people underestimate Jerry Jones's intelligence here. I think this is the year that the Dallas has to produce or Garrett's out of a job. This is it. Barring, you know, injuries that can affect anybody, this team stays healthy and does what it's capable of, Dallas will make some noise. If they don't, Garrett will be fired at the end of this year. There's absolutely no doubt about it. I don't care if everybody on offense and defense gets hurt. If he doesn't make some noise this year, the team doesn't win the division or get in the playoffs to do something, he's out of a job. It's over. It's done. So for that reason, yes, we can have some optimism. But I'm still in show me mood. Show me. All right. K-Star wants to talk about second-year quarterbacks. Who's likely to regress and who's likely to improve? And when we talk about second-year quarterbacks, of course, we're talking RG3. We're talking Russell Wilson. Now, Kaepernick, was he a rookie last year?
No, he wasn't.
Okay. So we're not talking Kaepernick. We are talking Andrew Luck. We can talk Kaepernick from the standpoint of a second-year starting. Maybe not a second-year player, but a second-year starter. Am I missing anybody? RG3, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck. Kaepernick only from a position of being a second-year starting. I am missing somebody. Not Ponder. Nope.
Tannehill.
Tannehill. There's another one too.
And was Whedon the first year's?
Whedon was there you go. Whedon was a rookie. Whedon, there you go. Okay. Yeah, I could see him, but I couldn't get the name out. So, K-Star, what are your thoughts? Your topic? What are your thoughts? K-Star? Did we lose K-Star? Oh, wait a minute.
Wow.
There he is, K-Star. Didn't know we lost you. Welcome back.
Thank you. Well, we touched a little bit on it in an earlier segment, kind of how such a rarity Slasher's class kind of was and how it doesn't really happen too often, in which we see so many talented rookie quarterbacks thrive and succeed at such a high level as we did last year. Now, with this upcoming season, it's expected for them to keep elevating their level of play, but obviously that's pretty unrealistic, especially when you combine injury with hype and just a second year, pressure is a little bit different now that teams know what to look for, know how to prep, versus you, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are. There's a lot of film out there. So I think the quarterbacks who will probably make the most improvement will probably be Ryan Tannehill, only because the gap, he wasn't playing as well as Russell Wilson, Luck, and RG3 were last season. He played mediocre. He played okay, a little bit under the radar. So I think he actually raised a little play to a probably a decent, above-average level of play, and he'll probably show the most progress. But for me, the quarterback I'm most optimistic about is Andrew Luck, simply because that they have a lot of skill position at the skill receivers, Reggie Wayne, T.Y. Hilton's emerging. They actually reunited Andrew Luck with Pep Hamilton, the Syracuse offensive coordinator. Andrew Luck is just a special kind of talent, as all these guys are. But when you add, again, Ahmad Bradshaw, you have the veteran leadership of Reggie Wayne, the familiarity with that offense. And honestly, probably the least amount of pressure is on him as it is compared to Russell Wilson and RG3. A lot of the spotlight's on RG3 and his recovery, and the team with the most pressure on it, arguably, is the Seattle Seahawks. So I think when you combine all those factors, look into it, I think Andrew Luck's probably the guy in which to keep the lookout for probably the most improvement out of those three. But again, Tannehill being the guy that has the most progress just from year one to year two. Now on the flip side, I am a little worried about RG3 simply because he was playing with a knee brace all season. They may have to change up the way they ran their offense last year because they need to put a protect him. They need to treat him more like a quarterback. While he could be a great decoy because his talent is honestly just unreal, unbelievable, they made me look at, again, trying a different type of scheme. And therefore, when you combine the fact that he doesn't play any preseason games, he's limited in training camp, I think that he is probably the most to overcome. And because of that, I think that he might actually show a little bit of regression from year one to year two. So that's just my take.
Who did you say might go backwards?
RG3.
Okay. All right. I'm going to jump in real quick and just say, first of all, I think of the group, I don't disagree with Tannehill at all. I don't think Whedon is just going to have enough around him, but I think his day is going to come where he's going to be elite. But I got to tell you, luck is for real. Luck to me, and here's my bigger, really for me, the bigger topic is what I said last year. We're going to see if T is a prophet or not, okay? Because what I said last year was the defenses will catch up. And the read option or whatever you guys, there's probably five names for it, run and gun, read options, whatever it's called. I don't think will be as effective this year as it was last year. And because of that, I think RG3, Wilson, and Kaepernick, guys that really made their living off of being able to do those plays, I think are potentially could struggle. Now, here's the thing to keep in mind. I think the coaching staffs of these teams, Mike Shanahan's a Hall of Fame coach. Pete Carroll one day will be in the Hall of Fame, whether it's college. Definitely college as a head coach. Pros probably not be a while, but he is a Hall of Fame head coach. Harbaugh, the Harbaugh brothers, both are elite head coaches, right? We talk about Kaepernick's coach. So these are very smart head coaches we're talking about here. We're not talking about Rex Ryan. Okay, we're talking about – I just don't like Rex Ryan as a head coach. I think he should be a defensive coordinator, and that's it. But these are good coaches. I think they know that they can't go in and do what they did last year. So I, as a football fan, I want to see when you start running those read options and the defenses react, now what? Because RG3 threw for almost 70% last year. But a lot of that was just deception. But he was an accurate passer. So if he didn't have that knee injury, I'd say I think the knee injury is going to – it's going to be an issue. Okay, Adrian Peterson is a freak, but he's Adrian Peterson. RG3 is not Adrian Peterson. I think the knee is going to be an issue. So I want to see when the defenses react and they shut down what these quarterbacks do. And since Andrew Luck didn't make his living that way, I think he is going to take it to another level this year. That's my prediction. I think, look out. I mean, look what he did last year. You know, got them in the playoffs, and all they've done is just as you said, Bradshaw, and they just added more. So I have to say, if I was looking at this crop, because of the schemes, not necessarily talent, because you can't RG3 probably is the most talented out of this group.
Right.
But looking at scheme, I got to give Luck the one that's going to go up, and I got to agree with the RG3 regression simply because of the scheme and simply because of the knee. I think he's a phenom, and next year we won't be having this conversation. He'll be 100% that played a year on that knee, and I'm going to be scared because I'm a Cowboy fan. I'll be like, can y'all trade him or something? But this year I'm not as worried as I'm going to be. Train, thoughts?
Well, man, I agree with, like, everything you said. I will say that all the quarterbacks that did use the read option, they did demonstrate, like you said, they demonstrate the ability to throw the ball and the ability to be accurate with the ball. I mean, the big thing that goes for Russell Wilson is his ability not to turn over the ball. I mean, he keeps it safe. You know, he doesn't force a lot of turnovers. But what you said about RG3 K-Star as far as Shanahan and the offensive coordinator need to change the scheme, I don't think they need to. RG3 got hurt for not getting down. It had nothing to do with the plays that they ran. He got hurt diving forward and then diving forward and kind of turn over on his back at the same time with his legs flying in the air. Why would you do that? When your legs are, like, that dangerous, get down. Get down completely to the ground. That's all on RG3. That is not on the coaching staff. So it'll be up to him to play a lot smarter when he breaks out of the pocket. And like you said, T, my concern as far as any regression in RG3 would be because of that knee. But I do think he still has the ability to stand in the pocket and throw the ball.
Real quick, he definitely does. No one's questioning his ability. But I do think that what I do disagree on you there, though, is with RG3, his instinct says, you know, to keep running, keep the play alive. But the job of the coaching staff is also to protect their players. And even if that means protecting them protecting them from themselves, if RG3 is the kind of competitor in which he's going to, you know, finish the play, probably take an unnecessary hit, the coaching staff needs to realize this is his mindset, this is what his instinct, this is what, you know, the kind of guy that he is. And because of that, probably call far fewer runs, stuff like that, because, again,
acting a pacifier in his mouth? He's a freaking NFL quarterback. Those dudes defenses are getting faster, so he has to know, eventually has to learn to get down.
Michael Vick
get
never
down,
did.
Get out of bounds, do what you have to do, but don't take the lick.
Right. But a lot of guys still don't learn that. I mean, Vick get hurt all the time. We see even my guy. We see Big Ben.
Okay, I'm sorry,
because
he's in there and took the hits.
That's not smart. And look at the turnovers Michael Vick had last year because he wasn't prudent with his decision making. Look at the turnovers. Look at the fumbles. I mean, there is precedent to say, you know, RG3 is a Vic-like player, you know, probably a better passer, you know, arguable if he's as fast as Vic. Vic at his fastest, it's pretty close though, right? So you have a model out there that you can watch and look at and see what he did throughout his career. And to me, yeah, you've got to be a self-preservationist out there. You know what I mean? And that, I agree with Trey. That's on him much more so than I think, because the coach can tell you anything. Slide, get down, run out of bounds. But, you know, when you turn up field thinking that you're going to break away and you get nailed, that's his individual decision because he's trying to make a play. Can't blame him for trying to make a play, but you're a quarterback. And your job is to be ready for the next play. And the hits that he took last year, you know, I don't know.
He took a sideline pop simply because he wouldn't go out of bounds.
Right.
Just go out of bounds. You have the first down.
Right.
He's out of bounds. It doesn't make sense. Coaches can't.
Again, that's why another reason, though, like, it's kind of makes him the bigger question mark and risk.
You're putting way too much responsibility on the coaching staff for a player
it's something they still need to consider because he's coming off a major knee injury, and they did rely heavily. They're the first to start implementing that pistol offense from week one against New Orleans that the rest of the NFL started to play copycat with, so they still put him at risk. My point is, there still really needs to be a change in philosophy to a degree, maybe not an overhaul, but to a degree, simply because of that injury. And because of that, it kind of sets RG3 back a bit. When, again, you add in conjunction, he's not playing in preseason. This is only his second year. He's hardly playing in training camp. Today was the first day of 11-on-11. I'm just simply saying that I think he's more at a higher risk to have a decline in play this season from his level of success from last season.
But I agree with you, just for different reasons. But I agree with you. Let's stay on RG3 just for a second. Donovan McNabb had some interesting things to say about RG3, and I'm looking for the quote here now. Let's see. I'm just trying to help RG3, but clearly the young generation think they have all the answers. And he's going through a little turmoil right now of trying to get on the field. And it's unfortunate, but that's where we're at right now as far as these young quarterbacks who think they have all the answers. I honestly think that over there in Washington, he's getting brainwashed. I hope the best for the young man, but the direction he's going in is really a direction he doesn't want to do. He does not want to go there with me. I don't even know where to begin. Donovan, I'm torn because, you know, he has a radio show in Philly. They simulcast on the internet. So, you know, you can view this as he is now a retired NFL player, and he's an analyst, and he has a right to his opinion, as the three of us do. But somewhere in here, I smell sour grapes. Somewhere in here, I smell personal, because obviously McNabb played a year under Shanahan in Washington. McNabb still, if you ask him, thinks he could play at a high level right now, but no one will give him a chance. He sees a younger, faster, frankly, in my opinion, more athletic version of himself, because McNabb was more of a bigger, he was very agile, but he was a bigger quarterback, and RG3 is more of the Michael Vick, smaller, but moving pretty, you know, elusive. But he's, you know, two African-American quarterbacks, and for some reason, my problem is not necessarily has an opinion, but it just feels a little personal to me. You know, it's kind of like, who was it? Bernie Kosar talking about, what quarterback was he talking about? It'll come back to me. And it was the same thing. Like, some of these retired.
Sorry.
It's for Jeff Fisher.
I just saw that, and I can't remember the name, but go ahead.
That's my problem with these former players talking about other players that played their position. You know, when you're critical, is it sincere honesty or is it sour grapes? Because you just retired. Like, you just officially retired, and now you do feel like you should have been playing and she could still play, but now you're sitting on the sidelines. And that's my problem with it. And I think that's why I don't like it. Not because he doesn't have a right to his opinion, but because I think the reason that he's bringing homeboy down is because he's saying, well, in the back of his mind, that should have been my team still. I never got a fair shake over there in Washington, and I should still be their quarterback, not this kid they drafted. I don't know. Train, what do you think?
I liked McNabb better when he was a player. He didn't seem so critical of other players, and since he's been in the analyst seat, he's been very critical of other players. And it's, you know, from a fan's point of view, for me, it's just distasteful. It's just like, dude, really? You did play this game, so you understand what they go through. You understand what it means to be injured for a long time and not be able to get on the field and wanting to get on the field and things of that nature. And the same thing with, you know, just to hit on Bernie, like, to sit in a booth and talk that bad about a quarterback, talking about it disgusts you to see him. Really? And you play the position so you understand what struggles you can go through? Amazing, man. It's amazing what people do when they get on the other side.
Yeah, I don't know. K-Star, any quick thoughts on this one?
I just said Don McNabb sounds like a scorned lover for the reasons you guys had already, you know, provided. And because of that, I don't think that he has, in my estimation, a certain degree of bias and resentment towards the Washington organization and a similar player in RG3 to himself, in that he was an athletic guy. He, you know, was, again, Donovan, also a quarterback of the Redskins, and this is the guy that came in and essentially took his job, and, you know, he's a scorned lover now, and that's what it sounds like. And honestly, I just wish he was talking about RG3 and talking about other people, because at this point it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I agree. Let's change directions and talk about NFL celebrations. First of all, let me just, you know, there was some discussion that the NFL was diluting the celebration rule even more, and then people got up in arms, and then they came out and said, wait a minute, slow down for a minute, hold on, and they clarified. But let me just say this before we talk about the clarification. I think the whole thing is ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. I think the fact to this that there is a rule limiting, prohibiting, or controlling how you celebrate is ridiculous. The only thing that I would be an advocate for, as long as you don't disrespect the other team, that's the only thing. But if you want to celebrate, you know, T.O. used to do popcorn and the Sharpie and Chad Johnson did things and, you know, Randy Moss and, you know, and I go from way back to Billy White Shoes Johnson, the dance he used to do, and Icky Woods and my man Deion Primetime Sanders. And, you know, I don't care. What is the problem? I don't understand. Who cares? It, you know, I will never, ever agree, ever. You know, you can't, you know, and if you can't use props and you can't use teammates. There's one time that Roy Williams, for wide receiver, he's played for Dallas Cowboys, played for Texas, and he always did the hook'em horn symbol, and he did it. And Sam Hurd, who unfortunately did some things he shouldn't do, no longer in the NFL, did some drugs deal and stuff, and he went next to him and did the hook'em horns, and because he was part of the celebration, they were flagged. And there was another time when Miles Austin leapfrogged over a player after they scored, and he was flagged. Are you kidding?
I remember that.
Are you kidding me? Are you effing kidding me? I don't understand. I just had to get it off my chest because I just think it's stupid. But let me just quickly say that the military salutes. You know, the first person I remember used to do this was Terrell Davis a long time ago. You know, he used to run all over Dallas. It pissed me off. But anyway, that's still okay. Okay, it's still okay. Aaron Rodgers, Super Bowl or championship, Triple H, you know, belt celebration, still okay. Okay, let's see. I'm looking now because I have. Let me see. The dancing like Pee Wee Herman. Let's see. I know that teaser was as long as they weren't okay. So as long as it's not taunting, it's going to be okay. Ball spinning. Everybody loved ball spinning, right? Doesn't appear that ball spinning will be allowed. Okay. Let's see. Okay. You can ball spin after a touchdown, but not in the field of play. That's what they're saying. Really? You got to get that specific? I think it's just stupid.
You know, if that was the case, they would have flagged Steve Smith during the Bears Carolina game. Because he didn't use the field of play.
I'm just reading this synopsis. Post-game backflips, still allowed. let's see. Home run swings. As long as it's not taunting, will be allowed. Chucking the ball. Yeah, they just throw the ball. As long as they don't throw it at a computer. As long as they don't throw it at an opponent, you know, they run it through, they score, and then they just throw the ball, it'll be allowed. Let's see. And that's it. Okay, so, frankly, the whole thing's stupid. It's ridiculous. Let them celebrate. Just let's go back to making this not the no-fun league. This is ridiculous. It's dumb. I don't even want to talk about it no more. Let's move on. I'm even going to let you guys comment because if K-Star disagrees with me, I'm going to hang up on him. So let's just move on. That's good. That's good because, you know,
I think it's all just silly because I don't understand the NFL's reasoning anyway. If someone butt hurt, I mean, I don't know.
Okay. K-Star wants to talk about C.J. Spiller. Is he the most underrated weapon in the NFL? And apparently, you know, the coach is ready to just give him the ball until he pukes. K-Star, your thoughts?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I love C.J. Spiller as a player. Last year, I don't think that this is widely known, he averaged over 6 yards per carry, over 1,500 yards, and he was his absolute dynamite. The only reason why the Bills had a few wins in which they did was because of this guy. And so now the complaint last year, though, was the reason why they didn't win more games was because he was underutilized, not featured. They have another pretty good back in Fred Jackson, but not quite with that talent that C.J. Spiller has. So enter Doug Marrone, a college coach who is known for featuring the running back and the rush attack pretty significantly in the rush attack team. So I just want to say that C.J. Spiller, I believe, is one of the most underrated players in the NFL, and I think he's a guy who could emerge, not just for fantasy, but actual skill and just watching on that position as one of the best players in the league next year. And for the coaching staff to say that they're going to run him until he throws up, I'm quite excited about because he's a guy who I want to see get the ball more and be a real featured weapon in the NFL because he is – let me tell you, he is explosive. This guy has some Barry Sanders-like moves. I'm not comparing him to as a player or as a career, obviously, because that's ridiculous to do. But as far as skill set standpoint, he's a rarity. And I think he has potential to be, again, a top-five player in the NFL just based off skill alone. So I'm happy that he'll actually get that.
But, you know, the Barry Sanders comparison is good on one level because he's going to play for a team that's going to do nothing just like Barry did.
I
mean, who cares?
Right?
I don't care if he runs for 1,800 yards. The team sucks. You know, you're playing in a division with the Patriots, and I guess they have just as good a chance as any AFC East team to get, you know, 8-8 and get some wins in and do something. And Spiller's the real deal. But at the end of the day, I'm not interested in watching individual talent that leads to nothing more than stat production. I want to see individual talent that's helping people win. I want to see individual talent that help teams win. That's what I want to see. You know, 1,800 yards on a 4-12 team, that ain't doing nothing for me. You want to watch that game? You want to watch the Patriots and the Bills and watch the Bills, you know, 49-21, but Spiller runs for 175 yards and 2 touchdowns? Who cares? Seriously.
Sounds like a fantasy football match for Spiller.
Yeah, I mean, on a fantasy level, yeah, absolutely. I'm sure he's going to be very productive. Could be a top five running back next year. I don't disagree with that. The guy I watched him play last year, the guy's a real deal. He's got some moves, and I honestly believe it or not, K-Star, I don't think the Barry Sanders comparison, I mean, we know Barry Sanders Hall of Famer, one of the best ever. On that level, no. But as far as talent goes, when you watch him, you know, I don't disagree with that comparison at all. But again, I take it one step further and say he also going to be like Barry playing on a team that ain't that to this year. Yeah, I think, I mean, we'll see what the Bills, the new coach and stuff, we'll see what they do. But I'm not optimistic that they've made enough moves to be competitive. So.
Agree. But, I mean, at least it's a step in the right direction featuring your best player. I mean, there's a lot of organizations don't even get that right, so we shall see.
Train, question for you that K-Star posed. I'm going to let Train go first on this one. And we're down to about 10 minutes left on the show, so if anyone wants to call in, 347-838-9525. Sometimes I forget to remind people what the number is in case you are listening to the Madden Voice. The chat room's open. You can catch us on Twitter. You can catch us on Facebook. Just Google the Madden Voice. Plenty of ways to connect with us. Tell a friend to tell a friend about the Madden Voice. K-Star posed the question, does Michael Vick have a chance to lose his starting job to Nick Foles? What do you think?
That's a...
Do you think it's legitimate? I mean...
That's a strange question. It's like saying, does Michael Vick have a chance to get injured while playing football? That's exactly what they question. Yes, he has a chance to lose the starting job. I mean, the coach said it's an open competition. If I was Chip Kelly, I'd start Michael Vick. But, yes, the Eagles were boo-boo last season. They didn't make the playoffs. It's the reason why Andy Reid is not there. So it's kind of wide open. And Vick still has to prove that he can do it.
K-Star?
Short answer, yes.
Okay, so I guess my problem with that assessment is last year Chip Kelly wasn't the coach. I wasn't Chip Kelly's offense. Wasn't necessarily Chip Kelly's draft players, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't really think that holds any validity here. I do feel that a lot of validity.
Go ahead.
Well, it does, and this is, again, new coaching staff, new scheme, everything else. Well, I don't think this competition, however, is really legitimate. I think this is more or less just trying to motivate Michael, probably bring the best out of him. While he is saying to Kelly that this is equal competition, I mean, when you watch Michael Vick play, and even in that preseason game against New England, that pass he made to DeSean Jackson is a clear indicator and reminder as to what kind of talent this man has and what he, since you went there in the past, has done before a couple of years ago under Andy Reid. And for me, I just don't see him having any realistic chance of losing this job aside from injury. So I guess when I was asking the question, if you felt like Nick Foles could actually realistically challenge him, probably would have been better worded. But I personally don't feel he can. I think
absolutely, positively not. The only reason Michael Vick is still on this team is because they need an athletic quarterback with experience and an arm, and he is the one to do it. Let's talk Oregon. This is Chip Kelly here, okay? If it wasn't Chip Kelly, Vick would not be on this team. Vick would have been traded, or he would have been – he did nothing last year. He was hurt, and then when he played, he didn't play well at all, okay? So this is the perfect scheme for him. He gives them time to go out and find their franchise quarterback. He's giving them a year or two to go out and find who's going to be the next heir apparent. Let them go find their RG3 or their Russell Wilson or whatever that's going to take over. That's what he's there for. Foles is insurance because he's got a little experience under his belt. But absolutely, positively, I see no chance of Nick Foles being a starter week one unless Vic gets hurt or something. I see no chance of it all. Vic will be running that team this year. Now, how well will he do? That's another conversation altogether. But he was signed to a one-year deal for a reason. They need him. They need him, and he will be starting that team. And I am more afraid of RG3 with a recovering ACL than I am afraid of Michael Vick after last year. He did not scare us at all last year. He just was not good. He did not play well. So he's got to earn my respect on that level. But as a business person, he was signed to start on that team, and he will start. There's no doubt about that. All right.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the last few topics, and I'm looking at the time. Let's do this. These topics are okay, but we can. There, nothing here is really that pressing. Let's wrap it up. Okay. I'm going to start with Train. Train. We are going through the preseason. All our teams are playing. What is it as you watch preseason? And incorporate this into your closing comments. As you're watching preseason games, just share with the fans what it is that you're looking for. What is it that you know, it's preseason, okay? So we're not watching it with the same eye we do the regular season. So when you watch preseason, and K-Star, you're gonna get the same question, but incorporate it into your closing remarks. What is it you're looking for as you're watching preseason football?
Well, strictly from a fan's point of view, first of all, you know, always looking at my team. I actually watched Chicago from beginning to end because I know the entire roster. You know, I just want to know you want to see how well your first team offense and defense do, and then you want to see, you know, what the rookies look like, and, you know, you also want to see the reserves that were picked up, who's going to be backing up, and how do the backups look. When I take a look at other teams, I pretty much look at their first team offense and defense just to see what they look like, see how well they come, see if they're going to be possibly, if it shows that they're going to be any better than they were last year or the same. And then, you know, if I know some well-known rookies, you know, the ones that they keep in the public eye, then I try to take a look at those rookies as well to see just what they look like. From a fantasy football perspective, I'm looking for the sleepers. I'm looking for the dude that no one else is thinking about. Let me pick him up in my last couple of picks. So those are definitely some of the things I look for in watching preseason football. And part of my last words, I do want to send a shout-out to a friend, a guy that's actually on the Detroit squad, wide receiver Terrence Austin. Hope he does. Definitely hope he makes the team. I believe that guy is pretty skillful. So just send him a shout out from TMD. Do well down there in Detroit, and come see the Bears. We are the monsters of the Midway.
And you got a great name, Terrence. Okay, K-Star. Same question, and incorporate it into your closing remarks.
Well, what I look for is kind of position battles. Who's starting on the first team unit? Just kind of how they play rookies in particular, especially when it comes to my Steelers. Like, for instance, I've been paying close attention to the play of Jarvis Jones, Le'Veon Bell, although he didn't play first preseason game, he is actually listed top of the depth chart. Stuff like that. And also how, again, for the Steelers, the offensive line is playing, trying to find some kind of hope, improvement, stuff like that, for which I'm seeing David DeCastro. Thank you very much. But, and to piggyback Train, I mean, fantasy football. I look for the sleepers on other football teams, guys who are younger who aren't really relatively known. And again, to be consistent, I pay attention to the guys who are actually being injected into the starting lineup and guys who look like they can make a legitimate impact on the season. And last but not least, I do pay particular attention to our division rivals and kind of what they have, seeing if they have any kind of legitimacy. Not that the preseason can really tell you that, but again, it could kind of give you an idea of where they might try to be. What kind of players they're bringing along to inject into that starting lineup. So that's what I look for, and I am pleased with my Steelers' progress there so far.
Excellent. I'll be brief. Two things I look at, of course, position battles are great. I love watching the old salty veteran hold off the upstart second or third year player for that position, or the hotshot rookie that comes in and is trying to overtake, maybe the third or fourth year guy who may be underachieving but also came in with the same kind of hype as that rookie. I think position battles in the NFL are really fun to watch. But I like watching schemes, too, because preseason, a lot of people don't realize, is a chance for them to either tighten their scheme, make their changes. I mean, it is really an opportunity, you know, in Dallas. The Tampa 2 defense, I was very excited to see it because we've seen a 3-4 defense and kind of a first it was Parcells went to the 3-4, and Wade Phillips, great defensive mind, and then Rob Ryan. So we've seen 3-4 for a number of years, and now going back to 4-3, which was really the defense of choice in Dallas in the 90s, and the defense of choice of Dallas in the glory years of the 70s under Tom Landry. And those old Cowboy fans will remember the flex defense with Bob Brunig and Harvey Martin and Leroy Jordan and those guys, which you could not run on, you know, where they would actually take the defensive tackle and move him half a body length off the line so he had a better chance to shoot the gap. And it was an ingenious defense. It was a 4-3. So now to see that back in Dallas excites me, and to watch it after watching 3-4 for a number of years is very exciting. But I love position battles too. And I'm cautiously optimistic about my Cowboys, but, you know, I'm going to tell you guys, teams this year in the NFL have to get off to a fast start, because it's going to be very competitive, and you got to get out of the box at 3-0, 4-0, 4-1, 5-1, because teams are adjusting, they're watching film, and it's going to be ultra competitive. So if your team starts out 1-3, 2-3, 2-4, you're done. I know it's the will. When we get to that point and one of our teams are 2-4, one of us will be saying, we're not done. There's still 10 games to go. You can't shut us down. And I'll probably say, yeah, I said it in the preseason, okay, and you're not done. But I'm going to tell you, you're almost done because we see it time and time again. You got to get off to a fast start. So these preseason games is why I don't agree with going to an 18-game season and two preseason games. You need 4 preseason games. You need a chance to try out all these players and have the position battles and run these schemes. You need 4 games. You know, and that's why the rosters get cut every week, because you need 4 weeks. You can't do that in 2 weeks. You just can't. So I get the injuries and all that, but injuries are part of the game. Anyway, those are my final comments. I appreciate Dr. Train making time for us. I know he's got a busy weekend, and I appreciate both my co-hosts adjusting for me, because I was the reason we didn't have a show last night, and both these guys, without any hesitation, said, yo, let's just postpone the show, handle your priority, and we'll see if we can come back on another night. Really appreciate both these guys. You guys are the best co-hosts anybody could ever have. I appreciate it. Appreciate it from the bottom of my heart, because I consider this a commitment, and if something comes up to get in the way, I take it very seriously, but you guys made it very easy for me to go ahead and handle my business, and here we are tonight, so I want to thank you both. Also, real quick, I know she's not listening, but I need to do this. I had a crisis yesterday over the last 36 hours, and there is a young lady friend of mine who a very close friend of mine, I hesitate to even use the word friend, but she's very, very important to me, who really stepped up to help me through this, help me deal with this, and I don't know that she'll ever hear this, but I want her to know that I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. And I want to acknowledge that on the air, because I feel like I need to. I got to pay it forward. So thank you. She knows who she is. Thank you very much. That said, we will be back next Tuesday night, 9 o'clock. And, you know, it'll be another week of NFL action, another week of great, great preseason action. What's the latest? What do we know about Tom Brady's knee? Is it truly just, you know, day to day and he'll be okay? Who else got injured? You know, what's going on with Geno Smith? What's going on with Aaron Hernandez case? What's the latest? We're going to be here 9 o'clock next Tuesday night, the Madden Voice, every week from now on right through the season. So tell a friend to tell a friend. We need our fans, our thousands and thousands of listeners out there, to spread the word about the Madden Voice. And if we're not doing something you like, feel free to send me a note or any of the co-hosts a note on Facebook, on Twitter, however you want to do it. Let us know what we can do better. We want to continue to strive to be the best we can be. So for Dr. Train, for K-Star, and for all the fans out there, we want to thank you. And remember, here on the Madden Voice, ultimately all feuds are settled on the field.